There were a couple of, I guess you'd call them gimmicks to Gasoline Alley in the comic strip. One was that the characters actually matured, which was not so of practically any other comic strip you could think of, where the characters tended to be frozen in time. And the relationship between the radio program and the comic strip, Gasoline Alley, was, so far as I know, unique in that for a time at least, the radio show was a reenactment of that morning's comic strip of Gasoline Alley. And here's how it sounded in, oh, circa June of 1948. We'll call it The Adventure of Jealous Jessica.
Your Autolite dealer presents your favorite friends from Gasoline Alley. Hold it, Wilmer. Hold it till I get this phone.
Okay, Skeezix.
Wallet and Bubble Garage, Skeezix Wallet speaking. What's that? Yes, sir, we can fix it. We can fix anything on four wheels. Sure, we'll be waiting for you right here in Gasoline Alley. Yes, it's Gasoline Alley, the comic strip that's a favorite in more than 100 newspapers. In this episode, The Adventure of Jealous Jessica, Skeezix and Wilmer discover that it's better to give than to receive, especially when the gift involves a new hat for your wife. But first, a word from the friendly Autolite dealer in your own hometown. Have you ever had a bulky engine spoil a vacation trip? Well, don't let it happen to you this year. It's so easy to have your engine checked at a reliable service station. Think of it. One single stop before you start that trip will help guarantee pleasure-packed performance from your engine. Clean new oil will protect and pep up your engine. A change to summer-weight grease assures money-saving, quieter miles. And flushing the radiator may prevent annoying and sometimes costly overheating of your engine. A check of your car's electrical system, from battery to spark plugs, may prevent trouble, cut dollars from your gas bills. So drive into a service station where you will be sure to get original factory parts and honest workmanship. Now, here are three places you can count on. Quick Service, Main at 3rd, Smith Brothers Auto Supply, Saginaw at Cord, Main Repair Shop, Hull at Center. Yes, these dealers will help guarantee you the smoothest vacation trip in your life. Now, Gasoline Alley. As usual, there's a lot of activity around the Wallet and Bubble Garage this morning, and as sometimes happens, Wilmer is just now arriving to take part in it. What is unusual is the look of grave and serious concern on Wilmer's face, and Skeezix, naturally, is curious about it.
Hi, Wilmer. What seems to be the trouble?
Oh, it's Jessica.
Well, gee, it's nothing serious, I hope.
Well, you'd think it was if you could hear her. She's after me to let her buy a new hat.
Oh, is that all?
Well, no, not exactly. You know, Skeezix, I've been thinking about our business, and I've come to the conclusion that something has got to be done around here.
You're so right, Wilmer. Better grab your wrench.
What I mean is we've got to start being more efficient, get more work out.
You're absolutely right, Wilmer. Get your wrench.
Maybe what we ought to do is raise our prices.
And lose all our customers to our competitors?
We've got to take more money out of the business some way.
Well, I think we're doing about as well as we can at the moment.
Yeah, I suppose so. In fact, that's just what I told Jessica.
Jessica?
Yeah, she's the one who suggested we ought to be more efficient. We ought to raise our prices, get higher profits.
Well, how come Jessica's taking so much interest in our business?
It's like I said, she wants a new hat.
The trouble with you, Wilmer, is you just don't understand women.
Does anybody?
Well, sure. Other women.
Get that while you're up, will you?
Wallet and Bubble Garage, Skeezix Wallet speaking. Yes? Well, yes, we can. Where is your car? Corner of Chestnut and Linden. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Some woman can't get her car started.
A woman, maybe I'd better go.
No, it's an emergency, and you still have to get into your jumper. You can tackle some of this work around here.
Okay, where do I start?
Wilmer, you know that as well as I do. Grab your wrench.
You Is it anything serious, Mr. Wallet?
Oh, no, ma'am. Just these distributor points. Oh. As soon as you get a little time, you ought to run into the garage and let us replace them for you.
I should?
Yes, ma'am. I was just noticing these spark plugs, too. How long have they been in the car?
Well, I really don't know.
You surprise me if you needed new ones. You know, it really pays to keep your ignition system in top working order. There, that ought to do it.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Now, how much will that be?
Oh, not a thing. Nothing at all.
Oh, but surely I must owe you something.
Oh, no, ma'am. It's just part of the wallet and bobble service.
Oh, but I insist.
Lady, please. I know my business.
Well, that's awfully kind of you.
Oh, not at all. Drop around this afternoon and we'll look over that ignition system and tune up your motor.
You've been so kind, Mr. Wallet. I wonder if you'd do one more little favor for me.
Well, sure, if I can.
Just take this to your wife.
Hey, what's this?
Well, it's a hat box, of course.
Yeah, hat box.
With a hat inside.
Well, I can't take this tonight. That is, my wife?
Well, of course you can. You're going to see her, aren't you?
Well, sure,
well, you just give it to her and tell her it's from Madame's Hats.
Madame's Hats. But, lady...
I'm Miss Mode. I own the store. We have very exclusive styles. A hat for every woman's taste and her husband's approval.
Well, I'm sure they are, but after
Mr.
all...
Mr. Wallet, please. I know my business.
Well, this is very nice
now,
of you.
Now, not another word about it.
But...
Why, Mr. Wallet?
Huh?
You said another word.
Hey, you back already?
Oh, sure, it wasn't serious. Just had to clean up the points a little to get the car started.
Well, I hope you charged her plenty for the call.
Nope, I didn't charge her anything.
You didn't charge her? You did all that for free?
Well, sure, Wilmer. She said she'd be in later for a motor checkup. Her car needs new spark plugs. Eventually, she's going to need a new battery.
So?
So I didn't charge her for the road call, and she'll probably become a regular customer.
Regular customer? You mean we'll probably never see her again?
Well, I think we will. In fact, I'm sure of it.
What makes you so positive?
Take a look in the seat of the tow truck.
What? For Pete's sake, a hat box.
Yeah, she gave it to me for Nina.
She gave you a hat for Nina? A free hat? How come?
Well, I don't know. I told her there was no charge for the emergency call, so she ups and hands me the hat box and all.
How do you like that?
She owns a store. Madame's Hats.
Madame's Hats? That's one of the most exclusive hat shops in town. Say...
What's the matter with you?
Jessica wants a new hat, doesn't she?
Well, yes, but...
And that woman appreciates service. Well, when she drives in here, she'll get such great service, she'll want to give Jessica two hats.
Listen, do you recognize this voice?
I've never been in a newsroom, never announced a newscast. Ah, yes, and I've never worked on a newspaper. There may be good news tonight, but you won't get it from me.
Perhaps you thought that was a famous news commentator, but actually it was Ted Jewett of New York City. Yes, often things seem alike. Automotive electrical parts look alike, but Autolite parts are original equipment on many of America's finest cars and trucks.
Switch to Autolite.
Remember, automotive electrical parts may look alike, but Autolite parts are made by the world's largest independent manufacturers of automotive electrical equipment. And Autolite service stations are equipped with highly trained men and specialized machines to give your car the proper service.
Switch to Autolite service.
Money can't buy better service for your car. So when your car's electrical system needs attention, drive into your nearest Autolite service station and ask for original factory parts. Remember, the name Autolite means spark plugs. Autolite means batteries. Autolite means ignition systems. Autolite means the lifeline of your car. Now back to Gasoline Alley and the adventure of Jealous Jessica. Miss Mould, the owner of Madam's Hats, has left her car at Wallet and Bobble's garage. And while Skeezix congratulates himself on winning a new customer and a new hat for Nina, Wilmer is giving Miss Mould's car the full personalized tune-up treatment.
How are you making out with Miss Mould's car, Wilmer?
Oh, it's just about ready to roll. And boy, have I done a tune-up job on this motor.
Well, that's good, because Miss Mode is here for the car.
Yes, ma'am. Your car will be ready in just a moment, Miss Mode.
Fine. I hope there wasn't too much wrong with it.
Not a thing, except for the new plugs and points. But while I was at it, I thought I'd better check everything, you know, just part of the service.
Oh, that was very thoughtful of you, I'm sure.
Sure, I didn't overlook a thing. Checked the time and adjusted the carburetor, checked the battery, adjusted the brakes and headlights, put an oil, water, gas on 32 pounds of air in the tires.
My, that sounds like a lot of air. I thought my tires only took 28 pounds.
Don't mention it. The 4 extra pounds are on the house. You'll find a car in tip-top shape. And just to make sure, I recommend a test run around the block. Hop in.
All right.
Be back in a minute, Skeezix. I'm just going to show Miss Mort everything I've done for her. Boy, listen to that motor.
Well, it does sound better.
The old bobble touch. When I work on a motor, it runs like a charm. Maybe it ought to run more like a motor. As I was saying, you ought to take advantage of the wallet and bobble service. Bring your car in regularly and let us check up on... Uh-oh.
Wilmer! Wilmer!
Tilt.
Wilmer, Bobble!
Hello there, Jessica.
Oh, Wilmer!
A friend of yours?
Hardly. That is, she's my wife.
Why, Mr. Bobble, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all. She's crazy. About hats, that is. But she's so jealous and... Here I go driving right past her with somebody else.
Wait, where are you going?
I don't know. Mexico might be nice this time of year.
But there's the garage right there.
Oh, yes, wallet and bobble. Well, thank you. It's been nice.
Thank you so much for everything you've done for my car. Will you just mail the bill to Madame's hat?
Sure.
And, Mr. Bobble, I wonder if you'd do me one more favor.
Well, I don't know.
Would you mind taking this for your wife?
Hey, it's a hat box with a hat inside.
Oh, certainly. Just tell your wife it's for Madame's hat.
I sure will.
Well, goodbye now.
Goodbye. Hey, Skeezix. Skeezix, look at this. She gave me a hat for Jessica.
Oh, swell, Wilmer.
Just like Nina is.
It better not be. We want our wives to be friends.
Oh, I knew I'd put it over. Plenty of service, I always say. Service in the old bobble touch.
Yeah, touch is right.
Skeezix.
Wilmer, what's wrong?
The most horrible thought just hit me, Skeezix. You know how jealous Jessica is, and she saw me in that car with Miss Mode, and now if I give her this hat, Jessica will... She'll
think she has good reason to be jealous.
Yeah. Here, take it, Skeezix. Here's another hat for Nina.
Well, thanks, Wilmer, but I'm not so sure I ought to give it to her. Gee, 2 new hats for Nina. I just hope this won't be habit-forming.
Yeah.
It's me, Wilmer. Can you step outside a second? How's Jessica?
I don't know.
Well, isn't she home?
Yeah, but she isn't speaking to me.
Well, no wonder. Here, this is for her.
Oh, no, not that, not that hat. I can't give it to her now, and you know why.
Wait a second, let me explain. Jessica isn't speaking to you because she expected you to bring this hat home to her.
Well, that's what I mean. She expected me to bring... Wow!
Yes. Jessica and Nina picked those hats out themselves. Down at Madame's Hats.
They did?
Yes, and they charged them to us.
They did?
They aren't free. We have to pay for them.
They did? We do?
Yes. The girls wanted the hats, and Miss Mode gave them to us to deliver because it happened to be convenient. And you know something? Jessica and Nina told Miss Mode to bring her car to us for repairs and service.
No kidding.
Yeah, they figured we wouldn't mind their getting new hats as long as we got some new business.
And boy, it sure turned out that way, didn't it?
How do you mean?
The girls got the hats, and we got the business.
Your Gasoline Alley friends will be back in just a moment. Now a word from your Autolite dealer. Your first vacation day is here at last. The luggage is all packed, the family piles in, you step on the starter, and off you go. Or do you? Well, if you've taken the proper steps to put your car in shape, you can be sure you'll enjoy every minute of your trip. Now, here are a few specific things you should do.
Have that winter sludge and rust flushed from your radiator. Drain and refill the crankcase with clean, summer-weight oil. And even more important, have a reliable serviceman inspect your car's ignition system from battery to spark plugs. Winter can be pretty tough on a car's electrical system. Insulation on wires cracks and rots, points become dirty, coils become lazy. Often, one stop before you go can guarantee a trouble-free trip. And for this one-stop service, drive into Fast Motor Repair, 6th and Oxford, or your service company, Mead at Wall, or Better Workshop, Sunset at Ridge. So, to be sure of a really relaxing vacation, drive in today.
There you have the gang at the garage. In today's entry, both in the comic strip and in the radio program of Gasoline Alley from about June of 1948, The Adventure of Jealous Jessica. Well, here's something else that went on just about every day. The soap opera on radio, usually, almost always in fact, quarter hours, and that's the case with Young Dr. Malone, which had a heck of a life, 1939 to 1960, just on the radio, and also it turned up in other places too. And tonight we go over to Three Oaks, which is where most of the action seems to have taken place, and we find out what exactly is going on? Who is interested in whom? That's really what soap operas are all about, isn't it? Who is interested in whom? And how, not exactly how will it even play out, because it never seems to, but just what will be the next development in a soap opera, including Young Dr. Malone.
C-R-I-S-C-O.
It's Crisco's Young Dr. Malone.
Cartier, do you mind if I ask you a question? Has anything gone wrong between you and Lucia? A few weeks ago, you and she seemed very close. Now I hardly see you at all.
This is a page from a new chapter in the lives of Anne Malone and her husband, Jerry, written by Julian Funt. We'll return to the Malones in just a moment. Now, in Three Oaks, Tom Ball is visiting with his mother-in-law, Bess Pringle.
Goodness, it seems like ages since I've seen Betsy, baby Tom.
Well, Jane's been planning to bring her over for an afternoon, but something always comes up. Say, been baking any pies lately, Mother Pringle?
No, I broke my rolling pin the other day, and I haven't got around to buying a new one.
Mm-hmm. Well, they say a milk bottle will work as well as a rolling pin.
Oh, Tom, if you'd like a piece of pie, why don't you say so?
All right, I'd like a piece of pie.
Well, I've just baked an apple pie with grated cheese in the top crust.
Mm-hmm.
Come along into the kitchen, you can have some.
Broke your rolling pin. Say, the next thing you'll be telling me is that you've stopped using Crisco.
Why, Tom Ball, I wouldn't think of making a pie without Crisco and Crisco's pastry method. Goodness, when I know I can get tender, flaky pie crust every time the Crisco way, I'd be foolish to change.
Well, I hope you never do, then. If that's the secret of the swell pies you make, I'm for Crisco 100%.
Why, even a beginner can turn out tender, flaky pie crust with Crisco and the pastry method printed on the Crisco label. You've heard me say that often enough.
Yeah, I have at that. And the next step is for you to tell me how digestible Crisco pie crust is.
Well, it is digestible. Crisco's pure and all vegetable, digestible itself.
Tender, flaky, and digestible.
Hmm?
Only thing that worries me is, when do I get this pie?
Just as soon as I get it cut. Now sit down there at the kitchen table and I'll get you a glass of milk to go with your pie.
About 3 days ago, on a sudden whim, Lucia Standish decided to have a party. So she picked up the telephone, called her caterer, told him what to serve and for how many, and that was that.
About 8 tonight, waiting for the guest to arrive, Lucia felt happy and pleased. For once, she had planned something which was turning out to be enjoyable. At about 10:30, abruptly, suddenly, surrounded by her guests, Lucia decided she was fed up with the whole thing and retired to her own room, leaving the guests to shift for themselves. First enthusiasm, then the pall of boredom. That's the way Lucia runs her parties, and that's the way Lucia runs her life. Eric Cartier and Jerry Malone are among the last to leave the party. And now we find them emerging from the apartment building together.
Well, it wasn't so bad. What'd you say? A nice party, although a short one. Possibly it was a nice party because it was a short one. Yeah, I see what you mean. That's still quite early. How about a cup of coffee? No, I think I'll walk home, call it a day. Good night. It's a very pleasant evening. Do you mind if I walk part of the way with you? No, certainly not. Good. Let's go. Unless, of course, you'd like a quick drink, one for the road. No, not me, but if you want one... later, perhaps. Shall we cut through the park? Yeah, good idea. I hear some interesting things have happened at the Institute. Such as what? Your appointment as director. Oh, that. Congratulations. I should have said it before, but this is the first chance I've really had. My most hearty congratulations, Doctor. Thanks. I'm sure you'll handle the directorship very well. What makes you so sure of that? Well, Lucia thinks very highly of your ability, and she's a very shrewd judge of people. Well, let's hope she's right this time. This new post will mean more money. Substantially more, no? I haven't thought about it, but eventually I guess it will. Do you mind me asking you all these questions? No, not at all. My mind reaches a peak of unhealthy curiosity this time of night. For instance, my next question is, how do you go about asking for a raise? You've got me there. Write a polite note to the board, I guess. The board? That means Lucia, does it not? It does, and it doesn't. We've been over that before, remember? Would you like me to put in a good word for you? I'm joking, of course. After all, nobody has to put in a good word for you. Not with Lucia. Cartier, do you mind if I ask you a question? Not at all. I haven't seen you around for some time. Has anything gone wrong between you and Lucia? Gone wrong? In what way? I don't know, except that a few weeks ago, you and she seemed very close. And now I hardly see you at all. Oh, yes, I understand. At one time, you'd heard we were engaged. And now you wonder if we still are. Is that it? Something like that. Of course, if you want to tell me it's none of my business, you're perfect. No, please, no. Your curiosity is quite understandable, and I would have no objections to giving you an answer. Except that I do not know the answer. Oh? At one time, as you see, Lucia and I were very close. That was followed by a period when we were, well, not so close. Now we seem to be good friends again. I see. I wish I did. How long our present status will last, where it will lead to, well, I'm afraid that's like a weather prediction. It depends upon a great many elements beyond my control. You are one of them.
I am.
Surely it will come as no great shock to you that Lucia is very fond of you.
Well, I'm fond of her, too, and I respect her tremendously for the work she's doing with the Institute.
No. That's not what I mean at all. Lucia is interested in you, dear doctor, as a man.
You're wrong about that.
I wish I could believe that. Malone, may I ask you one last question? Sort of a nightcap.
Sure, go ahead.
Are you interested in Lucia? What I'm trying to
say... I know what you're trying to say. And the answer is no.
Dr. Malone, are you sure I can't buy you a drink?
Almost midnight now in Three Oaks, and Anne Malone is sitting on the porch swing, listening to the soft night sounds of the crickets and tree toads. Suddenly they stop, and in their place, she hears the lonely, measured footsteps of a man walking the street toward the house. Anne calls softly.
Sam! Sam Williams!
Anne, what are you doing up at this hour?
Oh, I don't know, just one of those things.
Say, Anne, I was just wondering if it was all right.
Hmm?
I mean, if Gene is... Well, is he going to be a nuisance for you to have around?
Not a bit.
Are you sure?
Ask Jill the next time you see her. She's crazy about him.
What about your mother-in-law? How does she feel about all this?
She told me tonight she thought he was a very fine young man. She says she has an instinct about people, and she knows.
She certainly has one about me.
Does it bother you very much?
A little, frankly. But I guess I can understand it. But never mind that. That kid certainly seems to be a charmer. Jill, your mother-in-law, the nurses at the hospital.
He has a lot of charm, but he's no kid, Sam. He's 24.
Yeah, I keep forgetting that. Kind of hard to remember I've got to put 16 years back into my life. I just can't get accustomed to the fact that he's 24. Not that he's going to give me much of a chance to get accustomed to it. What about that, Anne?
What about what?
Has he said anything more about me? Anything you could repeat in polite society, that is?
No, he hasn't, and I thought it was a good idea for me not to bring the subject up, at least for a while.
Well, I guess you know what you're doing.
I don't know whether I do or not, but I do know that this questioning and cross-questioning of Gene was overdone.
Look, Anne, you don't have to defend your handling of the kid. You've done a swell job, and whatever you say goes. Not that I think even you can handle it from here.
Should I stop trying? Is that what you mean?
No, I don't mean that. I just mean that now he's admitted I'm his father, the hardest part's still ahead. To get some of the hate out of him.
We can't do that by giving up, ignoring it, can we?
No. The fact remains, Anne, Gene has a real grievance against me.
Possibly. But he also has a real need to... Well, to establish roots again, to identify himself with you, to work through his conflict with you. In other words, he needs love, Sam.
Anne, you're really wonderful. You know that?
What brought this on?
Oh, the way you've worked to get Gene and me together. The way you've handled me, the things you've put up with, the things you've ignored. Bad things, Anne. Things in me that... Well, that resist love, that try to destroy. And what you've done to Gene. It doesn't seem possible to change in that boy in a week. All because of your patience, your tact, your wisdom.
Steady, Sam.
Why, Anne? I tell you, I know what I'm talking about. You may realize I've changed in these last few months, but you'll never know how much. Years ago, Anne, there was a fire inside me, just like any other man. But I put it out. Poured on bitterness and resentment and anger until there was nothing in me but cold ashes. I'd given up. 16 years of that. Then one day, you. Now I'm alive, Anne. Today is good. Tomorrow is something to look forward to. That's you, Anne. That's your doing. Look, Anne. Right now, that husband of yours, in spite of what he's done, the kicking around he's given you, he's still in your blood and bones. Maybe that's the way it should be. I don't know. You're still fighting the shock and the disappointment. Still trying to find some adjustment to a life without him. All I want to know, Anne, is this. Can't I fit into that adjustment you're seeking? Can I be a part of the life you're going to have to find without him? Is there a chance for me? Anne?
You want me to be honest, don't you?
Anything less is no answer, Anne.
Then it's no, Sam.
No, I'm sorry, but I'm not taking no for an answer.
Listen again Monday to young Dr. Malone and all the other Three Oaks people who are brought to you by Pure All-Vegetable Crisco. Now, this is Ron Rawson reminding you...
They're cooking with Crisco. From New York to Frisco. Pies are so flaky, cakes are so light. Fried food's digestible with Crisco, they're right. So keep on cooking with Crisco.
There you have an episode of Young Dr. Malone, on the air for 21 years and also turned up in other forms as well. From the soaps to the future with X-1 when we return shortly. This is Old Time Radio Drama and the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is a shrewd story by Isaac Asimov, tonight's entry from X-1. It has to do with a sophisticated concept, and the title of it is shrewdly called Hostess. Our story, to some extent, revolves around cyanide, and is it good for you or not? Now, that is a theme that Asimov picked up on from time to time, a species that thrived on what for humans would be poison. But it goes beyond that. It's not just a what-if here in this story called Hostess, from X-1, from December 12, 1956.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X-1. Tonight, Hostess by Isaac Asimov.
I was so happy about it when I came home, almost triumphant. I dashed in the front door, peeled off my gloves, threw my hat on the side table, and tossed my coat over the back of a chair.
Well, you missed supper.
Drake, we're going to have him here.
Who here? What are you talking about?
The doctor from Hawkins Planet. Didn't you realize that was what today's conference was about?
When you say the doctor from Hawkins Planet, do you mean the Hawkins site you've got at the Institute?
Well, of course. Who else could I possibly mean?
May I ask what the devil you mean by saying we'll have him here?
Darling, the Hawkins site would like to stay at a private house somewhere where he won't be bothered with official ceremony, where he'll be able to proceed more according to his own likes and dislikes. I find it quite understandable.
Well, whenever you start using formal sentences, I know you're hiding extreme irritation.
Well, you don't seem to be trying to hide it at all. Now, what's the matter?
Look, I don't see where we've got room for extraterrestrial visitors.
Are you serious? He can stay in the spare room. Honestly, Drake, all we have to do is show a certain amount of adaptability.
Sure, just a little adaptability. The Hawkins site breathes cyanide. We'll just adapt ourselves to that, I suppose.
He carries cyanide in a little cylinder. You won't even notice it.
Mm-hmm. And what else is there about them I won't notice?
Nothing else. They're perfectly harmless. They're even vegetarians.
But what about us? Do we eat meat ourselves? Or will that make us look like cannibals to him? I won't live on salads to suit him, I warn you.
Drake, it means very much to me.
Well, why?
Because if he stays here for any length of time, I can study him real closely. Very little work has been done on the biology and psychology of the individual Hawkinsite or of any of the extraterrestrial intelligences. Surely you must see the opportunity. He stays here. We speak to him, watch him, observe his habits.
Look, I've spoken to men who are in charge of security groups watching various Hawkinsite missions on Earth. The missions stay in the rooms assigned to them. They don't leave for anything but the most important official business. They have nothing to do with Earthmen. quite obvious that they're as revolted by us as I personally am by them.
Drake, he's a doctor. He's coming here for medical research, and I'll grant you that he probably doesn't enjoy staying with human beings and will probably find us perfectly horrible. But he must stay just the same.
All right, all right. Have it your own way. You sure you don't want any coffee?
No. Drake, you're not angry about this, are you?
No. No, I'm not angry.
Most of my friends had been surprised when I married Drake because they couldn't understand my marrying a policeman. I explained he wasn't simply a policeman. He was a member of the World Security Board, but most of the staff at the Institute thought it rather odd that I hadn't married a biologist or at least an anthropologist, even a chemist, but certainly not a policeman. I was waiting for Drake with some apprehension that evening as I sat in the living room. Hark Tolan, the Hawkinsite, was standing quietly in the middle of the room. He was not sitting since he was not anatomically constructed to sit. He stood on two sets of limbs placed close together, while a third pair, entirely different in their construction, was suspended from a region that would have been the upper chest in the human being. His skin was hard, glistening, and ridged, and his face wore a distant resemblance to something alienly bovine.
Mrs. Smollett, you must forgive my English. The construction of my mouth, combined with the absence of incisors and canine teeth, is an obstacle to clear speech.
I think you speak very well.
Thank you.
My husband will be home soon, and then we'll eat.
Your husband?
Well,
husband?
Yes, you know. Mr. Smollett.
Ah, Mayo. Of course. You must forgive me, Mrs. Smollett. Perhaps the greatest source of confusion among the five known races of the galaxy lies in the differences among them in regard to their sex life and the social institutions that grow around it.
I understand that.
Concept of husband and wife, for instance, exists only on Earth. I can achieve a sort of intellectual understanding of what that means, never an emotional one.
Dr. Tolan, I've consulted the Institute in preparing a menu, and I trust you'll find nothing in it that will upset you. Drake? Drake, is that you?
Yeah.
I'm in the living room, dear.
I suppose he's all delivered, complete.
Drake, this is Dr. Hark Tolan of Hawkins Planet. Dr. Tolan, my husband.
Good evening, Dr. Tolan.
Mr. Smollett.
Would you care for a drink?
I'm not particularly thirsty.
On Earth, there's a custom of drinking liquids which have been fortified with ethyl alcohol. We find it stimulating.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid, then, that I must decline. Ethyl alcohol would interfere most unpleasantly with my metabolism.
Well, so it does to Earthmen, too. But I understand, Dr. Tolan. Would you object to my drinking?
Of course not.
Good. I need one. A stiff one.
He stood at the table. I tried not to look at him as he ate. His wide, lipless mouth split his face alarmingly as he ingested food. And in chewing, his large jaws moved from side to side. There was evidence of his ungulate ancestry. I found myself wondering whether he would chew his cud later, and then I was afraid that Drake would get the same idea and leave the table in disgust, but he was taking everything quite calmly.
I imagine, Dr. Tolan, that the cylinder at your side holds cyanide.
Quite so.
Pure cyanide?
I hope you are not considering possible danger. I know the gas is highly poisonous to you, and I do not need a great deal. None of it emerges, except when I actually suck at the tube, which is fixed at the corner of my mouth.
I see. And you really must have the gas to live?
Are you not a biologist, Mr. Smollett?
No, Dr. Tolan. Merely a minor government official. My wife's friends call me a policeman. Tell me, what happens if you don't breathe cyanide? Do you just go like that?
Oh, not quite. The absence of it would be equivalent to slow strangulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's also very painful, difficult to treat. I've done some research on the problem.
I find it difficult to keep thinking of you as a doctor.
I understand what you mean. I find it difficult to think of you as a policeman.
I gather that you're not here on a pleasure trip.
No. I intend to study this square planet you call Earth.
Queer? In what way?
It is always amazing to me to find how little you Earthmen understand your own characteristics. There are 5 intelligent races in the galaxy. Over and over, it is you Earthmen, more than any of the others, who are unique. Your people are the only ones which find hydrogen cyanide poisonous. Yours is the only form of intelligent life which is carnivorous. Yours is the only form of life which has not developed from the grazing animal. And most interesting of all, yours is the only form of intelligent life known which stops growing upon reaching maturity.
Well, you don't look very large, Dr. Tolan. I should say that you're an inch taller than I, which would make you 6'2". Are you young, or are you just small on Hawkins' planet?
Neither. We grow at a diminishing rate with the years, so that at my age it would take 15 years to grow an additional inch. But we never entirely stop. And, of course, as a consequence, we never entirely die.
Did you hear that, Rose?
I never knew that before.
You mean people on Hawkins' planet are immortal?
No people are truly immortal. Few of us live more than several centuries of your time. Still, it is unpleasant to think that death may come involuntarily. It is something which to us is extremely horrible.
Oh, we're quite used to it.
You Earthmen live with the thought. We do not. This is why we are disturbed to find that the incidence of inhibition death has been increasing in recent years.
Well, what is this inhibition death?
A pathological cessation of growth. It's a wasting disease. A tragic one. Absolutely incurable. It is fatal within a year.
What causes it?
Mr. Smollett, we know nothing about the cause of the disease.
Well, then why did you come to Earth to study it?
Because, again, Earthmen are unique. They are the only intelligent beings who are immune. The inhibition death affects all other races, while Earthmen are immune. Somewhere in the biochemistry of the Earthite, there is the secret of that immunity. How interesting it would be to find it.
Well, now, look here. You can't say that Earthmen are immune. From where I sit, it looks as if the incidence is 100%. All Earthmen stop growing and all Earthmen die. We've all got the inhibition that...
Earthmen live up to 70 years after the cessation of growth. That is not death as we know it. Your equivalent disease is rather one of unrestrained growth. Cancer, you call it.
Drake was being pleasant to Dr. Tolan. I wasn't sure whether it was for my sake or for his own. Drake has never gone out of his way to please me. Sometimes when I'm gloomy, I look at him across the table and ask myself, why did he marry me? And suddenly after dinner in the living room, Dr. Tolan asked a question which surprised me.
You are a policeman, Mr. Smollett?
Yes.
I wonder, could you show me through one of the police departments on your planet?
Well, I don't belong to a police department in exactly the way you imagine. However, I have some contacts in the New York City Department.
Would I be able to visit the Missing Persons Bureau?
Why are you interested in Missing Persons Bureau?
Because there again, you are unique. There's no such thing as a missing person on our planet. We're always aware of each other's exact location, no matter where on the planet we might be.
Can you feel such awareness even now on Earth?
You mean across space? No, I'm afraid not. But you see the importance of the matter. All the uniqueness of Earth should be linked. If the lack of this sense can be explained, perhaps the immunity to inhibition death can be also. Tell me truthfully, Mr. Smollett, if Mrs. Smollett were to leave this room and enter another without your having seen her do so, would you really not be aware of her location?
Well, I really would not.
Amazing. Please do not be offended by the fact that I find it revolting as well.
Drake? Drake?
Yes, I'm awake.
Why were you talking about the inhibition death to Dr. Tolan?
I'm taking an interest in your work, Rose. You've always wanted me to take an interest.
I'd rather you weren't sarcastic.
Rose, I'm tired. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
No, right now.
I want no questions from you and no interference. You do your job and I'll do mine.
The nature of my job is open and known.
The nature of my job isn't, by definition, but I'll tell you this. Our six-legged friend is here in this house for some definite reason. You weren't picked as biologist in charge for any random reason. 2 days ago, he'd been inquiring about me at the commission. But that's my job, and I won't discuss it with you any further. Do you understand?
No. But I won't question you if you don't want me to.
All right, and go to sleep.
I lay stiffly on my back, and the minutes passed and the quarter hours. I was trying to fit the pieces together. One picture remained clear in my mind. It hovered over me mockingly. At the end of the evening, the Hawkinsite had turned to me just before he left the room.
Good night, Mrs. Smollett. You're a most charming hostess.
I wanted to giggle then. How could he call me a charming hostess? To him, I must have been a horror, a monstrosity with too few limbs and too narrow a face. But then I saw Drake. He turned white. For one instant, his eyes had burned with something that looked like terror. I'd never before known Drake to show fear of anything. And the picture of that instant of pure panic remained with me until all my thoughts finally sagged into the oblivion of sleep. I remember one question that nagged at me through the haze. Why did he marry me?
I found your missing persons bureau interesting in that the large majority of missing persons are males.
Oh, well, that's not mysterious, Dr. Tolan. You simply didn't realize the economic setup we have on Earth.
And my wife is an example of the minority of women who are capable of making their own way in the world.
Would you call the Missing Persons Bureau of New York a fair sampling of such cases in the planet at large?
Yes, I should think so.
Is there then an economic explanation for the fact that since interstellar travel has been developed, the percentage of young males among the missing is more pronounced than ever?
Oh, that's even less of a mystery than the other. Nowadays, a runaway can hop the nearest space freighter. They're always looking for crewmen. No questions asked.
It's almost always young men in their first year of marriage.
Well, that's just the time a man's troubles seem the greatest. If he survives the first year, there's usually no need to disappear at all.
Would it offend you if I disconnected for a period of time?
Disconnected?
It's like sleep. Oh. I hope you haven't had too exhausting a day.
It's just that I've been absorbing so many new and unusual concepts that I feel a desire for a little disconnection.
Drake, we've been sitting here for 10 minutes. Aren't you going to speak to me?
About what?
Last night you said you'd speak to me tomorrow. Well, I'm ready now.
I thought it was agreed that you wouldn't question me about my business in this matter.
I think it's too late for that. I know too much about your business by now.
What? What do you mean?
Drake, let go of my arm.
What are you talking about?
Dr. Tolan thinks that Earth is spreading the inhibition death purposely. That's it, isn't it?
Where did you get that idea?
It's true, isn't it?
I want to know exactly why you say that. Don't play games with me, Rose. This is the key.
Why don't you ask Dr. Tolan? He's an outstanding worker in the field. I looked over his papers this afternoon.
And what are his theories about the origin of the disease? Try to remember, Rose.
I think he blames Earth, but I think he admits they know nothing about how the disease is spread.
Well, I'll find out about this right now.
Drake, what are you going to do? What's that?
It's my gun. I'm going to ask him a few questions.
He ran out of the bedroom, down the corridor, towards Dr. Tolan's room. I ran after him, caught him just as he entered the door. The Hawkinsite was standing there, motionless, his eyes unfocused, his four standing limbs sprawled out in four directions as far as they would go.
Now keep quiet. He'll gradually become aware of me. Get out of here.
No, Drake. What are you doing?
Quiet. There, you see? The skin on his face is beginning to quiver. Well, that's about all, Dr. Tolan. Don't throw in connection with any of the limbs. Your sense organs and the voice box will be quite enough.
Why do you invade my disconnection chamber? And why are you armed? What do you want?
The answer to certain questions.
With a gun in your hand? Sorry, Mr. Smollett, that the duties toward a guest are so badly understood on Earth.
You're no guest of mine, Dr. Tolan. You entered my home under false pretenses.
You had better shoot. It will save time.
You are convinced that you'll answer no questions? Now, that in itself is suspicious. It seems that you consider certain answers to be more important than your life.
I consider the principle of courtesy to be very important. You, as an Earthman, may not understand.
Perhaps not. But I can understand one thing. Your cyanide cylinder, suppose I... Pull it out of your mouth. Rose, hold your breath until I close the valve. There. All right, Tolan. You realize what will happen to you if you don't answer the questions I'm going to ask you. Cyanide lack. It would be a most uncomfortable death. I'm only an Earthman. I can't appreciate its true horrors, but you can, can't you?
Drake, give him the cylinder. Give it back to him.
You have about 1 hour, I think, until the effects are irreversible. Talk quickly, Dr. Tolan, and you'll have your cyanide cylinder back.
What are your questions?
What are your theories concerning the inhibition death? Why did you really come to Earth? What is your interest in the Missing Persons Bureau?
For years, I have been investigating the cell structure of my patients suffering from inhibition death. I've been forced to use the utmost secrecy, since the methods I used were frowned on by my people. Your society would have similar feelings against human vivisection, for instance. For this reason, I could not present the results I obtained to my fellow physicians until I had verified my theories here on Earth.
And what are they?
The inhibition death is entirely a disease of the mind.
You mean it's psychosomatic?
No, Miss Smollett, it is not psychosomatic. It is a true disease of the mind, a mental infection. My patients had double minds. Beyond and beneath the one that obviously belonged to them, there was evidence of another one, an alien mind. In short, there are not only 5 intelligences in the galaxy, but 6. And the 6th is parasitic.
This is impossible. You must be mistaken, Dr.
No, I'm not mistaken. One can imagine such a parasite through the course of millions of years, perhaps losing all portions of its physical being. It will become nothing but pure mind, living in some mental fashion we cannot conceive of on the minds of others, particularly on the minds of Earthmen.
Why particularly Earthmen?
Have you not surmised that the 6th intelligence is a native of Earth? Mankind from the beginning has lived with it, has adapted to it, is unconscious of it. It is why the higher species of terrestrial animals, including man, do not grow after maturity and eventually die. And it is what is called natural death. It is the result of this universal parasitic infestation. Where Earthmen could survive the infection for decades with little harm, we others die a quick death within a year. Give me back my cylinder. You have your answer.
What about the Missing Persons Bureau?
Drake, look at his eyes. Give it back to him.
As we are not well adapted to the intelligence that infests man, neither is it well adapted to us. It can live on us, but it cannot reproduce, with ourselves alone as the source of its life. The inhibition death is therefore not directly contagious among our people.
What are you implying, Dr. Tolan?
The Earthman remains the prime host for the parasite, and an Earthman may infect one of us if he remains among us. But the parasite, once it is located in an intelligence of the outer worlds, must somehow return to an Earthman if it expects to reproduce. We are infected and reinfected as the parasites return to Earth and come back to us via the mind of Earthmen who travel through space.
And the missing persons?
Are the intermediate hosts. The masculine terrestrial mind seems better suited for their purpose. But once reproduction has been taken care of, the infested male leaves by spaceship for the outer worlds. He disappears.
But this is impossible. What you say implies that the parasite mind can control the actions of its host. That can't be, or we would have noticed their presence here on Earth.
The control may be very subtle. It may, moreover, be exerted only during the period of active reproduction. I simply point to your missing persons bureau. Why do the young men disappear? I'm quite ill now of cyanide lack, and I cannot speak much longer.
And you alone, of all your people, have any knowledge of this theory of yours?
I alone. You will give me back my cyanide cylinder now. I have become quite weak.
Sure. Sure, Dr. Tolan.
Rose. No, no.
Rose, come out of here. Come on now. Come on.
He's dead. He's dead. You shot him.
Outside. Out. Quiet, Rose. Quiet. I told you to have nothing to do with this.
Let me go. I want to go. I want to go.
Why? Because of something it was my job to do? You heard what that creature was saying? You suppose I could allow him to return to his world and spread those lies? They'd believe him. What do you think would happen then? They would have to kill us all to stop that disease.
What he said wasn't a lie. It was true.
Oh, come on now. You're hysterical. You need sleep.
I know what he said was true because the Security Commission knows all about the same theory and knows it's true.
Why do you say a thing like that?
Because you let it slip yourself.
Now, sit down. Sit down. Well, so I gave myself away, did I? When?
You turned white when Hark Tolan referred to me as a charming hostess. Hostess has a double meaning, Drake. A host is one who harbors a parasite.
Well, I had no idea I was so transparent. Look, Rose, I've done my best to keep you out of this.
The truth can't be held down forever. Somebody else will find out. You can't kill them all.
We know that, too. We have no choice.
Why? Why can't we combine with the other intelligences and wipe out the parasite?
No, you don't understand. Hark Tolan was right. Man and his prehistoric ancestors have been living with this parasitic intelligence for uncounted ages. We've not only become adapted to it, we've become dependent on it. It is no longer a case of parasitism. It's a case of mutual cooperation. You biologists have a name for it.
What are you talking about? Symbiosis?
Yes, exactly. We have a disease of our own, remember? It is a reverse disease, one of unrestrained growth. You've mentioned it already as a contrast to inhibition death. It's all very well to say that if we could remove the parasite, we would have eternal growth in life. But it's impossible for us. If for any reason the parasitic intelligence, as Hark Tolan calls it, does leave the human body, or if its relationship to the human mind is in any way impaired, growth does take place, but not in an orderly fashion. We call the growth cancer, and there you have it. There's no way of getting rid of the parasite. We're together for all eternity. To get rid of their inhibition death, extraterrestrials must first wipe out all vertebrate life on Earth. There is no other solution for them. So we must keep knowledge of it from them. Now do you understand?
He got the body out of the apartment. I sat there numbly. He lied to me. Cancer could not be a disease that was an expression of lost ability for normal growth. Cancer attacked children while they were still growing. It could even attack embryonic tissue. Cancer had nothing to do with the presence or absence of normal growth. Its absence would not cause cancer. Drake lied. But no one would believe me. The young men who disappeared were usually in the first year of their marriage. Whatever the process of reproduction of the parasite intelligence was, it must involve close association with another parasite. The type of close and continuous association, as in the case of newly married couples. The parasite could control actions. I'd report them both, Drake Smollett and Hark Tolan, to the Missing Persons Bureau. But they'd never find them, for they'd be out in space. I wanted to weep, but I couldn't. I was dry-eyed, and it was painful. I'd looked for the answers to so many questions, and I'd found them all. I even found the answer to the question I thought had no bearing on the subject. I finally learned why Drake had married me.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features The Haunted Corpse by Frederick Pohl. The story of an inventor named Horn, whose invention lets us hold the world by the tail. Or is that our own tail? Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Hostess, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Isaac Asimov and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Terry Keane as Rose, Les Damon as Drake, and Kermit Murdoch as Dr. Tolan. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
A question about identity and immunity in a story called Hostess, written by Isaac Asimov, and it came to us from X-1 and the night of December 12, 1956. We have an adventure for Sam Spade next. I think you'd have to say that they're playing it for laughs tonight. It's next, as I say, and you're listening to Old Time Radio Drama here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.